C1P. Number 5A.
We stopped in the middle of the town of Principal. And so I just recapitulate the town of Principal as far as we have gone. You see, it's all a question of truth and mind, meaning what kind of a truth do I contemplate in my treatment? I contemplate the truth that principle is a truth in being, that therefore divine metaphysics is really the principle of the harmonious universe. And if I contemplate that, I say, now, what is that principle? What is the principle of divine metaphysics? Within that principle, I begin to see that it is metaphysics that is above physics, so that man is always operating according to the law of mind, always in obedience to the law of mind, that therefore man has never failed. And at the point of spirit, I begin to see that in the metaphysical realm, man has always been blessed by spirit. Spirit duly feeds and clothes every object as it appears in the line of spiritual creation. And therefore, I can see that from everlasting to everlasting, man has always been a state of blessedness, and therefore always at the point of feeling the substance and the of spirit, always receiving the benefits of spirit. He was never deprived of anything good. And at the point of soul, I begin to see that in the metaphysics of being, man never resisted really to be taught by principle, that man never hang on to sin, and therefore resisted the impact of principle and the teaching of principle. That he was always willing, really, to submit himself to the dictates of principle. And then at the point of principle, where we left the subject, we can see that principle, as the principle of metaphysics, establishes always the whole system and function of the system. So that science, at the point of metaphysics, is showing that the scientific facts of being are established and is operating as a harmonious system also of the body, so that there is no other system at work in principle. Then we come now to life. And here we see again something quite interesting. Namely, we have epitomized it through the even flow of the truth of being. Mortal mind returns to its own standard of normality. You hear here the tone of life, the flow of life, really that the waters of life, the floods of life, the newness of life, and that newness of life is an even flow of life, because she takes up the uneven flow of life, so to say. She says, if you look to your body, you may see either your blood rushing madly through the veins, or languidly creeps along the frozen channels. It's either overaction or inaction. And so she says, but what is it that produces this overaction, this rushing? What produces that languidly creeping along? She says, it's mortal mind that produces either the propulsion or the languor. Therefore, with mental means, she says, you can correct that circulation. How do you do that? She says, well, you have to apply scientific means. You get to principle. The scientific means. What are the scientific means? And here she gives that even flow of life and says that the truth of being whispered into the ear of mortal mind will bring relief. But how will it bring relief? What is really the physical healing? And here we have that important statement, when through mental means the circulation is changed and returns to the standard which mortal mind has decided upon as essential for health. You can see that healing is taking place when the even flow of life is restored, that there is no overaction nor inaction, nor propulsion or languor, but an even flow of life. What does it produce? It produces that standard of normality which not God, but mortal mind has decided to be necessary for health. Can you see that healing here at the point of the 12th chapter is actually healing physical discord? And that healing physical discord is not spiritual, is not healing on the higher level of divine science. It is healing on the level of Christian science, which means that the body has to change to that even flow which guarantees, so to say, the normality of mortal mind. Then mortal mind says, okay, I'm okay again. I'm healthy again. This is important to see. As I said before, a real good treatment really would take away the patient and put him right into heaven. See, would be a right ascension. Because the fact about, the metaphysical fact about man we have seen is that he is the idea of God. Or she even said there on the principal's mind that man is as the angels in heaven. Now if we make out of our patients angels in heaven, woe to us. Huh? Woe to us. So she uses here quite common sense and says, well, when it is a matter of physical healing, then it is to bring back mortal mind to normality through the even flow of life. She goes on and shows the metaphysics of principle from the point of view of truth, and here you see a wonderful combination when you think that she now has to show the metaphysics of consciousness. Truth is always consciousness. What is the metaphysics of consciousness? A point that is not recognized usually by most students of Christian science, because it shows, here is my epitome, that with divine metaphysics we can destroy all ills proceeding from conscious and unconscious mind. The student in general only is interested in removing the ills from conscious mind, and he recognizes only error when it is conscious to the conscious mind. But that is like an iceberg. It's only that tenth that is sticking out of the water. But the 9/10, which is under the water, is really the dangerous part of an iceberg. And so it is with consciousness. The unconscious part of our consciousness is really the dangerous part. And therefore, the divine metaphysics of consciousness will show that we have to deal with every kind of consciousness, not only with that conscious consciousness about which we are conscious, but that we actually should reach right down to the subconscious, to the unconscious, really to the archetypal conscious, even to the universal and cosmic unconscious, in order to correct all that deeper layer of consciousness. Or else we only really deal with a small part, perhaps with that 1/10 of consciousness, and leave the other 9/10 latent in consciousness, and as long as we leave it latently, then it always can break out. So latent consciousness, subconsciousness, just waits until a situation is prepared so that it can spring into action and come up from underneath and become a conscious error. Therefore, dealing really with an erroneous consciousness means that we deal with all that part of consciousness which we call in many ways, we call them the subconsciousness, the collective subconsciousness, we call them the unconsciousness, perhaps, as I said, the archetypal unconsciousness, universal beliefs, not only individual beliefs, collective beliefs, universal beliefs. And only in dealing with them, we really can free men from all erroneous consciousness. But that demands that we take refuge, so to say, to a supra-consciousness, to the consciousness of truth. If we fill our consciousness fully, really with all that what truth knows, what truth is conscious of, then naturally with that consciousness we cover any claim of any kind of consciousness. Here it is what she wants to bring out. Her reasoning goes like this. She says that our mind is only conscious, really, of conscious mortal mind. But how can then, somebody ask, how then can my mind cause a disease I never thought of and knew nothing about until it appeared on my body? See, that's always what we hear with a patient, that they say, well, Christian Science teaches that if I'm entertaining a false concept and a false consciousness, that that will manifest itself on the body. But suddenly I have a disease about which I had no concept. I was never thinking about that. I not even knew that such a disease existed. Therefore, they say, I think the theory of Christian Science is not quite right. The answer naturally is, and that's the answer Mrs. Eddy gives, that disease originates in human belief before it is consciously apparent on the body. Disease originates in a realm that is not known to conscious mortal mind, that is, lies in the unconscious realm and therefore is not known to us. She calls then this mortal blindness shows our need for metaphysics. So you can see, she says, because of that analysis, that disease is the outcome not only of conscious error, but also of unconscious or subconscious error. And as we do not know the subconscious, are we then, so to say, like a cork on the waves, just the play ball, so to say, of subconsciousness, and we can't defend ourselves? And so she says, yes, you can do something against it. You really can have your protection. If you go into the realm of metaphysics, into the realm of being conscious about ideas, if we have a consciousness of ideas and fill our consciousness only with ideas, then we deal not only with conscious error, but also with subconscious error, or with the unconsciousness. Therefore, we have to be rather awake to the facts and entertain very consciously the metaphysical idea. So this mortal blindness shows the need for divine metaphysics. And then she ends it up and says, through infinite mind. See, that would be the realm of the supra-consciousness, above the mortal mind conscious, through infinite mind or truth. Again, you have that wonderful combination of truth and mind. We can destroy the ills which proceed from mortal mind. Therefore, truth, the truth consciousness, will heal whatever an erroneous consciousness can produce. Yes. So this point must be clear. See, it seems as if the student has difficulty in learning this. I have been teaching that from the textbook, because Mrs. Eddy teaches this all over the place in the textbook. I have been teaching that to the students over years and years and years. And I can be quite sure that if something happens to one of the students, he comes along and says, "But I have never been thinking of it. I was not aware that such a thing existed." And I always have nearly to blow up and say, "What do you learn? What do you actually learn? You can read it in the textbook. You can read it in my introductory book. You can listen to it into my introductory tape. I make a great point of it, because Mrs. Eddy makes a great point of it, that disease is the outcome of both conscious consciousness, erroneous consciousness, and unconscious erroneous consciousness. So why always say I have not been thinking about this? I was unaware of anything evil. I was so happy and was living along so happily and without any struggle, without any fears, and without any, just happily along. And then suddenly something happened. How could that happen? Well, that could easily happen. The Titanic was also going over the ocean and went around the iceberg, but it kicked what was beneath the iceberg in the water and sank. That's what happens. See? We stumble over the unconscious error. We may be watchful, quite a bit watchful over conscious error, but not over unconscious mortal mind. And we can only be watchful over unconscious mortal mind if we consciously entertain the metaphysical consciousness, namely the consciousness of ideas, because ideas will always deal with any kind of beliefs, with any kind of beliefs, no matter if these beliefs are individual or collective or universal or cosmic, no matter if these beliefs are traditional beliefs, hereditary beliefs, personal beliefs, or whatever kind of beliefs they are. The genus of error is that they are beliefs, that they have only one gender, namely they are beliefs, and beliefs are handled through the metaphysics of mind, divine mind. Therefore, we must know the synonymous term and their ideas, or we deal with these errors with a religious belief. And then is one belief trying to correct the other belief, and naturally religious belief is always the weaker of both. Because since time immemorial, Abel was slain by Cain. The second degree is always slain by the first degree. It's only really the third degree, it's only really that consciousness of Seth and Enoch that can handle really any kind of belief. So here we get that teaching very clearly. You see that what we have to entertain in consciousness in the treatment is that principle has a truth, that metaphysics of principle has a truth, namely that it is a consciousness that is metaphysical, that is a consciousness of conscious, divinely conscious ideas, and that will handle all forms of unconsciousness and its effect. And therefore you can see that if we get to this standpoint of principle as truth here, that with this consciousness and entertaining this consciousness, we really handle latent beliefs and concrete beliefs, both. It is therefore the prophylactic and the therapeutic method of treating disease, both. We kill two flies with one stroke. Yeah. You go to the next subtone. Love. Here again, see, she shows the need for metaphysics. Divine metaphysics handles ignorance and fear as the cause of what? Of future disease. Now she handles the future, even the future. How does she reason it? She says, ignorance of the cause or approach of disease is no argument against the mental origin of disease. See, again, she picks it up and says, well, if we are ignorant about the cause and about the approach of disease, you know, when really mortal mind begins to work on us in quite behind the scene, unnoticed, begins to web its nice web of intricacies, and then suddenly just wait until the whole web is finished, and there we are like a fly in a spider's web. There we sit and can't do anything anymore. That's how mortal mind really tries to operate. And so, confessing that we are ignorant of the future. You see, that's another argument. That we are ignorant of the future. We don't know what the future brings. Each one says, well, how can I know? I'm not a prophet. I don't know what the future brings. Who can be a prophet and say what happens tomorrow? What happens with my life? What happens with everything I have tomorrow, the other day? When and how it will happen? And this, she says, rather helps disease. This induces sickness. See, that uncertainty of the future, that fear of the future, that unrecognized fear that is practically in everyone about the future. Everyone has unconsciously some kind of an incertitude of the future. She says, there is the belief that there can be danger. Isn't that so? That there can be danger. Because there may be danger, we take up all kinds of insurances. And therefore, in this way, we even produce more the belief that there is danger, and that danger is actual and is a reality and can happen. And so with this kind of thing, we induce disease. And you can see very clearly that we build up quite unconsciously a great sense of fear and danger of the future. Well, that which handles the future is naturally only love, because the plane of love knows that the future is ours, that the future is beautiful, that the future is full of promise. It needs a completely restructuring of our attitude to suddenly feel that we can only go forward, that in the plane of love is shown that we can only go forward, upward, higher, nearer to the point of fulfillment, nearer to that fulfillment of our plan and of our destiny. This should really be our inner conscious attitude. Then we would handle fear and danger of the future. So divine metaphysics alone can handle that. No religion can handle that. Religion can say, well, you know, God is love, and God will look after you, and God will never let you down, and so you can build up a religious hope and a religious trust and a religious feeling that everything will be okay. But it's still a feeling of the second degree. Nothing more. Psychology can't help you. They can't do anything else but to strengthen a little bit your mortal mind and say, well, you must be a bit more optimistic. It's much better to be optimistic than pessimistic. You always have to expect the best and not the worst. See, but still leaves open, there is a possibility that something could happen. So the first and second degree is no help for the future. We really only find one solution for the future, and that's divine metaphysics. To recognize what is the plan of love, and to understand that plan of love, and to be sure about the plan of love, that love can never be without its objectification, that love can never be without its object, that love can never be without its perfect fulfillment. And we can see that through all the seven synonymous terms, and then we are sure about it. And then we can see that being, capital B, or love, being, has no other chance but to fulfill itself. That there is nothing in being that could let us down. There is nothing in being that could go backward. And then we feel, in this way, we can handle really the danger of the future, fear of the future. Yes. So that's the tone of principle. Let's just flow through it again. You know, we just have always to see the big points. See, you say to yourself, here I am and I have to give a treatment. I have to know the truth. I have to know the truth about what? About principle. What is principle? A principle says, I demonstrate myself through divine metaphysics, not through anything else, not through beliefs or medicine or anything. I demonstrate myself through metaphysics. And so my consciousness fills itself with that sense that principle as mind says, in the principle of being, man is always at the point of idea, the idea of mind, and that idea is always lawful, therefore obedient, therefore it can never do something that is wrong. Cannot even be aware of something that is wrong, cannot even have a wrong concept. It's always at the point of being ideational. And therefore, from the point of view of spirit, I begin to see that every situation has already the blessing of spirit, has already the wonderful substance, the reality and blessing of spirit, so that it does not need to be blessed. It's already at the standpoint of being blessed. And therefore, I begin to see that there is nothing in being that can contradict soul, that can be sinful, that can say, I don't accept the impact of the divine principle. So principle as soul says, I can teach even the sinner, even the one that does not want to accept really science. And at the point of principle as principle, I begin to see therefore that everyone is already at the state of a scientific health. That means that everything in him is already functioning according to a divine system. That there is no chance whatsoever for anything not to function according to a divine system. So that the body and the organs have no chance not to function according to the divine system. So that I see, well, then, what does that system bring forth? Always when you come to life, truth, and love, you get the demonstration of that system. So life says that system has an even flow that never retards and that never goes overacts or reacts or is inertia, whatever it is, you see. There's always that rhythmic action, that flow of action. And through that action, always establishes the even balance of the system, the normality of the body and of mortal mind. And as truth, it says, this principle says, and because I know I'm aware of only ideas, I have only a consciousness that is of the nature of truth, and that corrects every so-called consciousness, whatever that consciousness tries to be. Be it the conscious consciousness or the subconsciousness or the unconscious, it really dominates it. And therefore, as love says, there is no reason whatsoever to be afraid of the future, because love gives me that metaphysical idea which says that love always will have its perfect manifestation and objectification.